I would do it as them doing I've Been Working on the Railroad.
Okay, why is that?
Because I really like that song.
Okay, that's great. So anyway, and you know, it's good that you've been working on the railroad because you've been derailing me this whole show. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Sneaky Dragon, episode 76, Sneaky Dragon Into Darkness.
Sneaky Dragon, I thought it was Sneaky Dragon 76, Trombones Into Darkness.
Sure, that's an old reference. Dave starting off with another 1930s reference. By the way, that's David Dedrick, and I'm Ian Boothby. Nice to see y'all. Or I can't see you. You know what I'm saying.
Look, I know where you're going.
I'm going to be honest with you. This is another episode of Sleepy Dragon. I have not got enough sleep at all. So I'm just warning you off the top. I'm going to try and bring my B game. That's the most I can do here.
Well, as usual.
Yes. That's right. I'm my bee, like the energy of a bee is what I'm going to bring to
this. So what you're saying is it's impossible for you to do this show, but you're going to do it anyway.
Oh, it's not impossible for bees to fly.
I always heard that. Is that
not
true?
Yeah, you did. Now, here's the situation with that. They said, this is actually true. This is a true fact to start off with. I feel like we're CBC, Quirks and Quarks. I'm telling you something. Okay. They went like, well, the bee flaps his little tiny wings up and down. Mm-hmm. Hey, that's not enough surface area. Can't fly. Here's how it goes. Bee does not fly with the wings going up and down. It mm-hmm. flies in a bit of an oval. So that covers more space, and that allows them to fly.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Okay.
I remember there was an episode. I remember there was an issue of the Submariner comic, and they said, how does he fly with those tiny wings on his feet? And they said, much in the same way a bumblebee does, no one understands it. So,
Submariner. That's where it all
started. Yeah.
That's where the whole thing started.
Yeah.
Oh,
Submariner should not be able to fly with those things on his feet.
I blame Stanley.
You should.
Excelsior.
Yep. You should blame Stanley. I just came from, we were at a con with Stanley. You could have blamed him in person then, but you took the coward's route. And I'm going to be mispronouncing words through the whole thing, everybody. Just deal with it. There's no spell check in verbal podcasting. But a couple of weeks ago, you were in the same venue as Stanley, and you decided to hold off for weeks and then do your Stanley bashing in the safety of Hell Kitty Studios.
That's right, because I am a coward.
Good for you.
And I admit it, though. I'm not shy about admitting that I'm a physical coward.
Okay.
And a moral coward.
Aw.
And a spiritual coward and an intellectual coward.
Okay.
I'm totally willing to admit that.
And a Noel coward.
And a Noel coward.
You're scared of Christmas.
Was he scared of Christmas?
A Noel coward.
Oh, a Noel coward. I see what you're saying.
By the way, we had some more listeners when we had our show with Joanna. She was on our show.
We had more listeners.
Than normal. And a few of the listeners.
Are you saying that our listeners before that were not normal?
Yes.
Okay.
And the listeners that were new, some of them went, "Is it all fucking puns?" And yes. So that
yes,
look,
it is.
Look, we're not going to change because of you.
That person was probably a one-time listener because they don't enjoy that. They don't enjoy the.
Well,
puns.
They did. They actually liked the show, but they just like off the top, they were like upset about the sheer amount of puns. It's like, dude, look. We got to fill an hour.
We do.
All right. What do we got? Neither of us plays an instrument very well. We have no skills. Mm-hmm. We could do magic for you, but we'd have to take our word for
it. That's right.
You know, because it's, you know, audio. So how, you know, the only thing we can do mm-hmm. is, you know, rely on verbal witticisms.
That's right.
And hopefully at some point, you know, a nice pun comes out and you'll enjoy it. But if you don't enjoy the pun, well, then we're all screwed.
I often said I'm going to levitate during the show. But I tend to do that in private.
Yeah. Well, that's you're a big fan of Doug Henning.
Exactly.
Not his magic, his political career.
His political career. His love of magic.
Yeah. I really wish, those of you that are too young to remember, there's two things. One, this was a gentleman named Doug Henson who is Canadian.
Doug Henning.
Sorry about that. Doug Henson is not.
Who you're talking about.
At all. Doug Henning. Well, here's
Doug
the thing.
Doug Henson he was an insurance salesman.
Right.
He lived in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a fairly uneventful life and did not run for politics at all.
Right.
But anyway, back to Doug Henning.
All right, Doug Henning. Yeah, we'll fill the latter half of our show with his life story. But Doug Henning was a magician, kind of on par with, I'd say, like a David Copperfield, that kind
yep.
of guy.
I would, in terms of level of fame?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and so he'd have TV specials and that sort of thing.
In terms of outrageous hair, bigger than David
right.
Copperfield.
Right, he was about 90% facial hair. that man.
And head hair.
Yeah.
Just a hair.
Well,
just
that's on person. His, I guess that is connected to his face. Well, this is what he would
you
do.
You don't say to someone, why you have a hairy face?
Well, it depends.
Because his hair is on his head.
If he's a wolf man.
Are you a vampire? I mean, a wolf.
Yeah, a vampire.
I'm going to be mispronouncing mythological creatures during the show today.
Please do.
Okay.
Yeah. So he would pull like cards out of his hair and people go, ooh, and he'd be mistaken for various Hudson brothers, I would assume. That seemed to be a common look back then.
Oh, man. Take a drink, everyone.
Sure.
that reference went well back there, too.
Anyway, so now imagine you're American and Doug Henning.
I love
Doug
them Henning, on the Sonny Cher show.
And you're David Copperfield, mm-hmm. decides, I'm going to run for president.
Okay.
Imagine how awesome that would be.
He ran for president?
No, he didn't.
But because he's Canadian, isn't he?
No, I know. Okay, if David Copperfield,
David Copperfield,
I'm doing a comparison.
I'm sorry. I was still thinking about the Hudson Brothers.
I know you were. And their Razzle Dazzle show.
No.
And that emu.
Because they were on Sonny and Cher.
Yes.
And they did the song Little Darlin'. You know
sure,
that song?
Sure, yes.
And they did it, but they did it as statues. So it started with them like you know, gray. They're all painted gray.
Right.
And all kind of frozen. And then they come alive and they start singing the song. And then they go back to statues at the end of it.
Okay. Well, if you know what I would do with that same gimmick, because I would do California Dreamin'. Because mm-hmm. all the leaves are brown and the sky is gray and yeah. you're gray, but then they start going for a walk. I've been for a walk
okay.
on a winter's day, and then it gets a little sunnier and they get some color in them, and then it ends with them back in gray again in their statues.
You know what? I would do it as them doing I've been working on the railroad.
Okay, why is that?
Because I really like that song.
Okay, that's great. So anyway, and you know, it's good that you've been working on the railroad because you've been derailing me this whole show. All right, so. Doug Henning. Well, I was comparing to David Copperfield. Imagine Americans, David Copperfield runs for president. How awesome would that be? Makes the Statue of Liberty disappear, goes like, I'm going to bring your liberties back. Something like that. Makes sure. a whole bunch of guns disappear, yeah. makes crime disappear. Doug Henning did the same thing in Canada. He was running, I think, with the Natural Law Party.
Yes. And he's a fan of transcendental meditation.
And levitation was like a big thing. He was saying like, I would...
The form of levitation, yeah, it was a kind of flying something? That they,
yes. Yeah. He would like cross his legs and apparently
lotus.
Somehow
The
fly.
Flying lotus position.
So imagine a floating David Copperfield running for president. That's what we had in Canada for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the Doug Henning story.
My favorite part of Doug Henning, though, was his way of talking.
Please do.
Because he had that kind of... He had sort of a...
Here's an impression, one of Dave's many impressions.
A voice that I would describe as a bit sissified.
A little bit.
And he liked to talk about how magic was.
All right, let's talk to the ghost. He, by the way, passed away. Rest in peace.
Well, I don't want to make fun of him then. Forget about it. Let's move on.
Well, you're making all your references. Everyone you make fun of is dead.
And the thing
all your references are 1930s. You know?
And,
we made fun of Fred Allen, I think, three shows ago. So don't even worry
last
about
show,
it.
And I believe that was you. Sir.
Okay.
But
and you got all the references and corrected me on stuff.
I laughed.
That's Senator Claghorn, Ian, not Senator. Okay, now please.
But his thing was to go, now it's the wonder of magic. We're going to do a trick now, and it's going to be so wonderful because it's the wonder of magic. And what's weird is
he
even
sounds
as
like a little mouse when you
And
do
even
him.
As a little kid,
yes.
you knew that that was weird. Like even though you're watching when you're 8.
A little bit jarring, a little off-putting.
And you're like, this is not the way you describe magic. Like, mm-hmm. this guy's kind of odd. And also, he'd wear that, like, unitard or, like, the jumpsuit or whatever. Like, it was, like, arms and, you know, it was, like, one shirt and pants all together with a rainbow on it. Like,
okay, yeah.
That's what he always wore. He
right.
Of course, he had his hair parted in the middle, straight
As you
down,
do,
straight
back
down,
in the day, yeah.
giant mustache.
Yep.
And then sitting there cross-legged on the floor, making little weird gestures with his hands, telling us how magical magic was.
Yep.
And he just said, this man is wrong.
There was a weird episode of Saturday Night Live where I think Rich Hall did an impression of Doug Henning. And
Ooh.
Then shortly in the show, it was some other person also did their Doug Henning.
Okay.
Like, you never see that. You
no.
never see one guy do Sean Connery and then later yeah. another actor does Sean Connery.
You never hear impersonations of Doug Henning.
No. And then it was like two in the show. And then yeah. later on, I think Rich Hall did some more like in later episodes. But my feeling was someone was pitching the Doug Henning thing around the room.
Yeah.
And they went like, I can do Doug Henning. So can I. And both the sketches were so good. Well, we'll do both.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, you shouldn't do both.
Why not?
Don't do both. Why? Because you shouldn't have the same impression twice in a show. That's weird. Unless you're connecting the two things in some way. And like, oh, he's back. Now Lucille Ball is back. You know, you can't have two
yeah.
gals doing Lucy. But it was a weird, jarring Saturday Night Live back in the, I think, the season that Martin Short was on it.
Yeah.
He was only on for 1 year.
He brought Ed Grimley over from SCTV.
Yes, he did.
and they kind of made him a continuing character.
It's weird thinking.
I think would be diminishing returns.
A little bit. It's weird thinking that someone like Martin Short had to buy his characters back from Second City. But apparently you have to.
He did, really.
Yeah, because any character you make up on the Second City stage, you have to buy if you want to use in other locations.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You don't own them.
That seems wrong.
Yeah, it does. But he bought Ed Grimley, and he bought like a couple of other characters.
Rusty.
And then later, was it the boy? Rusty. Yeah, yeah. That's right. Yeah. That was on SCTV. I don't think he probably had to buy it to do SCTV because that was, of course, Second City.
Yeah.
But when it moved to Saturday Night Live, yeah, the characters had to go. That was a weird thing. I think we've mentioned this before, but Gilbert Gottfried, when he was on the show, he didn't want to do any of his characters because he went, "I want to own them." And if you do them on Saturday Night Live, now Saturday Night Live owns those characters. So he went, "Nope, I'm keeping those for myself." And that worked out great. Best season there was. You know what? You're on TV. You know what? Save it, buddy. Save it for your for your live show.
Do your best show for the festival. 10th in your 10th season on the show.
That's exactly what you want to do.
Bring it then.
That's how you play out.
Start small, work tall.
Right.
That's mine too. Like, I'm starting off and I'm working up. By about the 150th episode, I will blow your fucking socks off.
Okay. Well, we are at the halfway mark now to that.
That's right.
So mark your calendar, everybody, don't listen until then.
please stop listening until I'm better. Is what I'm saying.
You know something, Dave?
I don't.
Oh, by the way, there goes a motorcycle. I'm worried about this neighborhood. Too many motorcycles now. It's becoming Sons of Anarchy around here.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So it's a lot of 60-year-old actors pretending they're 40?
60-year-old actor? I thought you said 6-year-old actors. No, that would be a Sons of Adorable is what that would be.
Sons of Adorable. Brum, brum.
Just on Hot Wheels going by? Yeah. Yeah, that'd be nice. Daughters of Anarchy I'd watch. That'd be kind of a sexy show.
Sure.
I remember as a kid, like, reading Easy Rider magazine because that was the only place you could see, like, nudity. And somehow the people who were stacking the magazines in the racks didn't realize there was nudity.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like...
Well, they knew.
Do you think they did?
Oh, yeah. No one cared then.
Well, no one seemed to care.
That was the 70s.
10-year-old me was looking through a motorcycle magazine.
That's fine.
And they all, like, sent in pictures. It was like, I think it was like, send in a picture of your old lady, they'd say in the
that's
back.
Right.
That doesn't seem like a thing that could happen now. You couldn't have that in a magazine.
They did it in Hustler magazine, too. I've heard.
Yeah, okay. But in a magazine that's, like, almost legit, send in a picture of your old lady.
Is semi-legit.
I think it was semi-legit from where it was on the magazine stand.
Because you could look at Heavy Metal magazine right on the magazine stand.
Yeah, but that's robot boobs.
Yeah, but still.
But what was the magazine?
It's boob action.
What was the magazine? Sorry to keep saying the word boobs. What was the magazine that always had a sexy robot lady on the cover? Was that? That's not Omni magazine, was it? There was one of those magazines that was always like sci-fi stories, but they would justify somehow always a bald, sexy robot lady on the cover every damn month, it seemed like. It was like Oprah magazine, always says Oprah. This was like sexy robot magazine. I think Omni might be the legit magazine, and this was the not as legit. But there was one I remember, like, always on the stands.
Doesn't
that was
bell.
Always the thing.
I never noticed it.
Oh, it would have rang your bell, buddy.
If I noticed it, I would remember it.
Now, were you a Heavy Metal fan?
I did enjoy Heavy Metal magazine, yes. Because I did not, because I like comics, but I didn't like superhero
comics. Did you like comics.
Comics
with a C or with an X?
I like comics with a triple X.
Okay.
Comics.
That sounds gross. That sounds really gross.
There's actually a lot of sixes or X's on that. No, I like comics with a K.
With a K? Okay.
Comics with a K.
Right.
But I like comics, but I didn't really like superhero comics. So once you kind of grow out of Richie Rich.
Right.
And you haven't.
So you hate Super Richie then. You've grown out of Richie Rich. So Super Richie is right out of there.
It wouldn't have been that interesting to me.
Right. That was a comic, by the way. Super Richie and Cadbury the Butler, they fought crime.
And I haven't fully...
Basically just getting their own money back, because, like, who else has got any money in that damn world?
I haven't fully arced back to nostalgia for Richie Rich. So you're over it, and you're looking for something new, right? So,
right.
So Heavy Metal was hit and miss, but it did have lots of beautiful art in it. And it was very confusing.
Right.
And you always felt like if you could one day read the whole thing, like read a whole story, it would make more sense.
Oh, I thought you meant get through the whole magazine, because I'd never been able to do that.
No? Well, there was some things wouldn't interest you, so you just skip past them, obviously.
Yeah, just a bit too European for
me. Yeah, it wouldn't interest you. But there was guys like Drouet. Do you remember Drouet? And he did these really kind of psychedelic colored... And I can't remember the name of the comic that he did now, but I managed to find in a remainder bin at a comic book shop one time the complete story, like the whole thing. So I was like, oh, well, I can finally understand what the hell I was reading. And then I read it, and I still don't understand it. It had made no sense from beginning to end. It was the same with the airtight garage of Jerry Cornelius. Well, I was going to say,
like, Mobius had that stuff in there, obviously. Airtight, beautiful work.
Yeah, the airtight garage was in... airtight garage of Jerry Cornelius is interesting because, you know, what's strange about it is that there's the Michael Moorcock books about Jerry Cornelius. There's mm-hmm. four of them, or three of them. There's a trilogy or I can't remember if it's a tetralogy or
a tetralogy? How much is a tetralogy?
A tetralogy would be four, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't that be a quadrology?
I don't know. Maybe a tetralogy would be five.
Wouldn't that be a quintology?
I think it's different. I think if you're counting,
it's different. Wouldn't it be a sexology?
I think you're thinking of...
Most of it seemed like a sexology to me.
I think you're thinking geometric and not numeric counting, right?
All right, very good.
Because tetra would be four, I believe.
All
four-sided.
Right. Sure.
Like a tetra pack is four-sided.
I wish we had Sean Stewart around. He is studying math. He would be able to help us.
He would be able to answer it like that. Plus, he's also a quiz master.
Yeah, let me just look at him. I'm going to look him up on the phone and see if he's... he just called us fucking nerds.
He doesn't want to answer the question.
No, he's kind of a man's man.
Yeah, he is a bit of a...
He's not into that bullshit.
He runs marathons.
He does. He runs marathons while doing math in his head.
Yeah.
He is better than either of us combined.
Mm.
Yeah. He's basically, and he plays guitar. He's Buckaroo Banzai is who this guy is.
He's Buckaroo Banzai.
Yeah. All right. But please continue with your heavy metaling.
Well, I was just thinking, because Jerry Cornelius, so there's the book, the Michael Moorcock books about Jerry Cornelius, and then Mobius has his own strip, which is totally unrelated to the books, about a character called Jerry Cornelius.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of weird, right? Like, it's kind of like, you know, it's the 70s, and, you know, copyright, what the hell, just do whatever you want. I'm going to take your name of your character and make it into my own thing.
Really? That's how it went?
That's what it feels like.
Was it something to do with being European, and so you didn't have the same laws, like you take an American thing and you do it over...
Well, copyright...
Where's Morbius? France? Is that France?
France.
It could have been Belgium. France. You always get that fool thing. Ah, you're mm-hmm. French. No, I'm Belgian. Damn it!
Yeah.
You're Australian. No, I'm New Zealandish. Damn it!
You can tell because they say we as the car on the other side. But,
Wait, where's the car? That's how people in Belgium sound?
No, the difference... You know there's that Flight of the Conchords?
I'm Tintin,
but...
I am.
Oh, he's Cockney. Snowy. He must be from Belgium.
Snowy.
I lost my train of thought now. Oh, it's international copyright applies worldwide now.
Okay.
Most worldwide. China, I think, doesn't pay attention.
I was going to bring up China.
Yeah, I don't think they pay attention, but most everywhere else. Unlike, say, at the time of Dickens, who was completely frustrated because his book sold, like... hotcakes in America, and he got bupkis for it because there was no law requiring American publishers to pay him for the stuff they published.
Do you know what I was thinking? Sorry, I want to just go like a sidebar here. What's the name? Hadfield, the astronaut, Canadian astronaut, just came back.
Chris Hadfield.
Chris Hadfield. I was watching
Hadfield.
I was watching him doing the
Space
David
Oddity. Yeah.
Yeah, he was out there mm-hmm. playing the song, and I thought to myself, I wonder if he had to pay royalties. Then I thought, he's in space. What's he going to pay? Space royalties? He is not even on Earth. You could do whatever you want up there, buddy. Hey, write your own Harry Potter book. Whatever you fucking want to do. You're in space, man. What are they going to do? Come and get you? No, you're fine. You cover as many songs as you
I'm
want.
I'm afraid that once it's being played on
No, you've YouTube. Sent it to Earth. Once you've sent it Earth, but you created it in outer fucking space, brother.
Everything goes into outer space. Everything you do when you upload something.
Oh, it goes, but it doesn't get created there. I think law occurs. Like, here's the thing. If something's illegal in America, I mean, they can watch me do it across the border here in Canada, but they can't do anything about it. And I think
if you import your illegal activity into the States.
Who did, man? YouTube just put it out there, brother. I'm in space playing whatever song I want.
He's down on Earth now. He's paying.
Hey, guess what? I'm making my own Star Wars movie up here using real stars and shit. Hey, fuck. There you go. Nice. Once we're on the moon, we can do whatever we want.
Okay.
Good stuff. Anyway, please continue with your heavy meddling. Airtight garage.
Well, I was just going to say that both of those had that kind of incoherent storytelling that seemed to be a sign of the 70s. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
There's something, because I also bought the, when Marvel, through the Epic line, brought out the complete Mobius.
Right.
So I got the Airtight Garage, because once again, I was like, oh, finally, I can see the whole book, and I can understand, because I would miss installments or never saw the beginning of these stories. So I assumed that if I could read it from the beginning to the end, I would get it, and that was not the case at all. I still didn't know what happened.
It was a good era for one amazing artist doing their interpretation of another amazing artist.
Like for
I was,
instance?
Yeah, I was listening to, I'm going to give credit where credit is due here, a podcast called Wait What, and they were talking about the 2001 comic book. And so you had Jack Kirby doing Stanley Kubrick doing Isaac Asimov.
Arthur C. Clarke.
Sorry, doing Arthur C. Clarke. My mistake. And so you had the interpretation of this through the interpretation of this.
Are you going to be mispronouncing sci-fi novelists through the whole show?
What?
Okay.
Yeah. So I pronounced Harry Potter correctly, didn't I?
Harry Potter. Yes, that's what you said earlier. Good.
All right. Yeah. All right, fair enough. That does sound like something they had in Heavy Metal magazine, but it was the dirty version.
It's done by Richard Corbin.
But yeah, the idea of like Jack Kirby doing his interpretation of a Kubrick movie, mm-hmm. you know, it's just like, well, that's just neat. It's like, and really adding his own style, not doing, you know, what you don't want them to do, which is like making it exactly like the film and then the filmmaker making it exactly like the book. You want to like, if you're going to change mediums, go bananas. Otherwise, you end up with the Watchmen movie, which is fine technically, but it's just like, hey, you know what? Put your own spin on it, brother.
Yeah.
Go to town. Yeah. Have at it. We've got the original. Well, now, you know.
I don't know if that's a good thing to say, though.
Jack Reacher it up. You know, put him in space. Jack Reacher's in space.
You sucker punch it up. Just do your own thing. Oh, well, don't do that.
Punch is his own thing. He didn't adapt anything.
I know. That's why I'm saying, oh, don't do that.
Okay. Maybe the guy can't come up with his own concept.
Did you happen to see Sucker Punch?
I did.
Because you were sucker punched.
I did not care for that film.
No one does.
Yeah. And you sort of saw John Hamm at the end going, I'm kind of ashamed to be in this movie. Shaking his head. I'm off to do Mad Men. Bye.
Well, Phyllis went to see it with a friend.
Oh, are they still friends?
And they were going to see it at the IMAX.
Oh,
they got to the theater.
Boy.
And they missed the first show.
Good.
They had to wait 3 hours for the next show.
Better than watching the movie.
They bought their tickets.
Okay. That's a mistake.
Then they went and they fooled around at the nearby mall.
Okay.
And then they came back.
Wait, the girls had to go to a mall?
I know it's
terrible. Were they okay?
They lived.
All right.
So then they came back.
Yeah.
And then they got in line for the IMAX experience.
Okay, yeah. The lineup's still better than the movie.
And then they got to the front mm-hmm. of the line, and the lady told them that they weren't allowed to go to the movie because it
was a terrible movie, and she cared about them.
They didn't meet the age. They were too young.
Right. It's cruel for children to make them. As an adult, you can make that kind of choice to go see a shit-tacular film. But like an adult should take a child aside and just go, you're too young and impressionable.
Yeah.
It's like an adult can do heroin, but a child should not.
So
damage your body and your mind.
It seems kind of unfair, though, that they would make you wait 3 hours. They would sell you the tickets.
Yeah.
Then make you wait 3 hours and then refuse you entrance at the door.
Well, did they buy it from a human or did they buy it from a machine?
They bought it from a human. They bought it at the...
Oh, well, that's stupidness.
It seems kind of unfair.
Yeah.
So then that goes... I can't remember what film that she and her friend actually saw.
But it was better than that one.
But it was better than that one. So she really wanted to see it, though. So
I know.
We saw it. We watched it. And, you know, we made a kind of big deal about it. We watched it. And she actually turned to me and said, I've been sucker punched. So I kind of like that. That's good.
And you went, oh, Dad was going to make that joke. Damn it.
That's right. I had it written down.
Confound it. With Heavy Metal magazine,
tell me what you think of Heavy Metal.
All right. Now, I was not...
Because you weren't too into it then, you're going to say?
No. But the time that
it was a big expense.
Yeah. First of all, it was expensive. Second, I liked superhero comics. I liked horror comics, too. I liked a different kind of comics, Western comics, whatever. But like when I read it, it was like it was titillating, but it wasn't titillating enough.
Okay.
It was like it had technically women in it, mm-hmm. but they weren't women that acted like women. Like none of them were anyone that you would ever. It sounds weird to say none of them were any you would ever talk to, but just like, well, like even at that age, I was like, well, these aren't women at all.
Yeah.
Like at all. And they weren't what I liked about women at mm-hmm. all. You know, it was just like they were just walking.
They weren't doing math.
They were just walking bodies, you know, and mm-hmm. they were like.
Exaggerated bodies.
Well, yeah, exaggerated, and they were just falling over the guys in a crappy way. Like it was just like, ugh, it was gross. It really just read as gross, you know, to me, mm-hmm. and did not work. Like I would have, you know, listen. I was sneaking pornography from the woods. If I found pornography, I would read it.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't getting on my, you know, high horse of just like, will I never? But it was just like, it was like wanting chocolate and you got carob. You know, yeah. I get what you're going for, but have you ever tasted chocolate? Because I was doing shows, musicals, and I was actually like meeting real girls.
Okay.
And they talked and had personalities and stuff.
I probably hadn't experienced that yet. And, well, I shouldn't say that. I had cousins who were girls.
Yeah, and there's objectification, but this was just like, well, what do you think? Like, it's beyond objectification. We're like, they're all jerks. Like, every one of them was a jerk. Like, to the point where I'm just like, well, you just don't like women.
Mm-hmm. Well, like
you're
like
mad at them.
Like I say, there's things that you liked about it, and there's things that you just turned past. And I probably enjoyed, I think it was Den, was that the Richard Corbin stories in there?
That's possible.
And they were pretty boobtacular. Like, he really exaggerated the ladies, you know, with this airbrush technique and all that kind of stuff like that. And I liked those stories, but I liked them because Den is like a boy. Because the story is like he's a boy, but on this planet, he's a man who's doing these manly things, but he's still a little boy, you know, experiencing this world. And that's kind of a fun concept. But I didn't like, there's other things like Rank Xerox and stuff like that, which I did not enjoy. Like, I just found it too, like you say, it's kind of gross. It's so detailed. And
I got no problem with that exaggerated. I mean, admittedly, it was later on. But something like a Gilbert Hernandez would go, you know, bananas with body parts.
Yeah, if you read Birdland.
Yeah. I mean, that was just straight pornography. But just in the main Love and Rockets book, he'd have characters that you'd just be like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
But they were fully developed like, in many ways.
Who are you thinking of? I would say Fritz and her sister would be exaggerated things like that. But right. Luba, I wouldn't.
Okay.
Because Luba, I mean, no, she's enormously endowed, but he gives her these skinny legs, which is not an uncommon like type, you know, to where how
but
you
they're
store your
fully
fat.
Personality.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's got a set of you know, feelings and what have you. And so, you know, you feel less giggity. And like you don't feel good reading it on the bus. Like you got that open on the bus and someone's looking over your shoulder. You flip the pages and you try to find a page that isn't so bad to read, and maybe I'll just listen to my Walkman.
Yeah,
Millis, my Sony Walkman.
Millis complained about reading Love and Rockets at school, just for that reason. Like, you turn the page and you're like, whoops, let me just put this away.
Would that be a problem at school, like, if you had that?
Well, I think it's not a problem. I don't think the teachers would care as much as the other students would be kind of eyeballing you like, what the hell are you reading?
Yeah.
But one thing, you're reading comics.
I could see, like, teachers confiscating or putting it aside or just, like, not here. Mm-hmm. I could see that definitely happening.
Yeah, because they want to read it.
Well, good for them.
Yeah.
It's good that teachers want to read.
Yeah.
Nice.
They take it away from you, and then later on, you see them reading it.
Now there was also the French version of heavy metal, which was the more hardcore version, right? The Metal Hurlant.
Metal Hurlant. Oh, I think it's basically the same. But
there was North American ones in ours that weren't in that one, and I think there were some European ones that we did not get.
Oh, okay.
Here, I think
they're even crazier.
They were even Frencher.
Oh, okay.
You know,
that's not necessarily worse or better.
What'd you think of the movie?
Well, I saw it when I was in grade 8, so
yeah.
I thought it was fine.
Yeah,
like, if I saw it now, I don't know what I'd think of it, but...
I didn't like it because of the cruelty, and that just, like, put me off.
Where was the cruelty in it?
The cruelty was just, like, people's faces burning off and people looking at things and, like, and just being dissolved and shit.
Okay.
It was the kind of stuff, like, as a boy, you would draw or make up. And here's the thing. I wasn't watching children. That sounds terrible.
Because they had the Jodorowsky Mobius one in there, right? With the taxi driver?
I believe so, yes. And they had a lot of, you know, speaking of Second City, which we weren't.
That almost became the Fifth Element in a way, right?
A little, yes. Yeah. But there was a lot of Second City voices, by the way, in that one. But
John Candy was Den.
Yeah, I don't want to say that I was looking at children without finishing this story, because that sounds terrible.
I thought we'd just leave it there.
I was buying you a Coca-Cola, as I do every week.
And I thank you.
Because you go, I needed the sugar.
Yes.
So I went to the local soda shop and cigarette emporium.
Yeah.
And in there, the owner's child was running amok.
Mm.
And he had, he was like maybe, I don't know, four.
Okay.
And he had a angry bird and he had a pig. And he was putting the pig down on a chair and the pig was going, don't kill me! Don't kill me! I'm going to kill you! You're going to die! And throwing the bird at the pig. And like, And, okay. I think we're hardwired to have that in our in our heads.
Yeah.
That same kind of, that's what I felt in the heavy metal movie. Hmm. It was like that kind of, you know, you draw it in your notebook as a kid, people dying horribly and flame throwers burning people and skulls and faces melting. And it was like, okay. But then it was like adults doing it. For some reason, it weirds me out. I don't mind when a kid does it. I don't mind when a teenager does it. But, you know, when you're a grown-ass man and you're doing that kind of stuff, it's just, ugh. Kind of bugs me.
But if you're a teen and it's okay, it's not okay to read it?
As a teen, I kind of realized this wasn't what... It was.
When did you see it then? I saw it when I was in grade 8.
It
came out when I was in grade 8. It was out the same time as Stripes.
I know I saw it on a VHS tape.
Oh, okay.
I can tell you, on probably a front loader VCR.
Okay.
So maybe 83, 84? Does this make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Sure, yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I saw it, and you know, some parts were like, oh, there's some nudity. I can sort of maybe make this work. And then there was some stuff that was sort of semi-funny, and it was like, okay, that's all right. And then there was, it just felt cruel. There was cruelty for cruelty's sake, violence without balance.
Yeah.
And yeah, I did not care for that. It was off-putting to me as a young man.
It was a restricted film, so I had to pay to see Stripes and then sneak into heavy metal.
Right, because you weren't going to pull a Millis. You weren't going to make that mistake.
No. As a Phyllis, you meant.
Was it Phyllis?
Phyllis.
I never know which of your fake daughters has the fake name. It was so much easier when we had them in the front row of our restricted show. And you just let them in. You let them come to our live show. Children were there. And you still were Johnny Potty Mouth.
What's this? What? Sorry?
At our live show, when we did the live show.
It wasn't restricted. Why was it restricted?
Well, because we are an explicit podcast.
Are we?
Yes, you know that. You filled out the form. And you went, are you explicit? And you went, fuck yeah, which is how you have to like fill it
out. That's how you fill it out. It says fuck yeah
on the
little box.
And I went, oh, well, we've got young people here, and we had like a wide range of audience members. Yeah. Not a lot of audience members, but we had people of different ages and, you know, things.
Yeah.
And went, well, I guess we're not going to swear at this show. And then Johnny say a fuck, had to throw him out there. And, you know.
Well, you know what I always say? Fuck them.
That's right. You'd just come from church, and you'd been saving up all your swears, and this is who went to town.
I go to the Church of the Holy Swear Word.
Indeed you did.
Yes.
Indeed you did. You know, but something I did like, though, when I saw it
was... In the beginning, there was the F word.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Go on.
No, I wanted you to go on with that. Something I did like, speaking of European things that were magazines, was Viz. Even though that was
British,
that was immature. Yeah, that was like, you know, Buster Gonad and his unfeasibly large testicles, stuff like that.
The fat slags. And,
yeah. You know, I didn't like the fat slags for some reason as much, but I liked a lot of the stuff that was in there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just went, oh, wow, like you can do comics like this and just go, like I'd seen Robert Crumb stuff, which was like, it feels like Robert Crumb is just going, be offended. I've got to get this out of me. I've got to.
Yeah, his mid-period, I would certainly...
It feels like he's not so much, I've got a story to tell, but I got to get this out of me or I will die.
Yeah.
Which, when you see his brothers, he was right. So I understand that. And good for you finding a way of getting that out. But this was just like, seemed like over-the-top, crazy comedy for comedy's sake. I'm going to offend you, but like, it never seemed cruel. You know, it was like over-the-top, but not cruel.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I'm fine with.
Well, I guess it was my first or second trip to England. I bought a Viz magazine. It was the first one I saw.
Right.
And I'd heard about it, but it wasn't available here.
No.
I couldn't find it here. So I bought it when it was there, and I thought it was very funny. And it wasn't, it didn't just have the cartoons in it. It also had parodies of like magazine, like kind of women's magazine articles and stuff in it as well. There's one that was like, what kind of person are you? You know, do you wear glasses? And then it would be, you are short-sighted, or you have problems seeing. And it described this thing, you know, do you have long ears and whiskers? You are a rabbit. And so I was laughing quite a bit at that. But my only problem with it is it suffers from the same thing that all British comics of that type suffer from.
Let me take a guess. One joke we're going to do for 100 years.
Yeah, whether
one
it's Bino.
Joke, one joke.
Yeah.
Or,
whether it's Dennis the Menace and Beano, or Lord Snooty, or Buster Gonads.
Or almost every British show.
Like,
if you see all the, like, whenever I go to England, I love seeing the kind of chat shows. I don't mean chat shows as in, like, the Tonight Show kind of thing. But there's tons of shows where you have one guy in the middle of a table, and then four guests, usually, like, two of them that are regulars all the time.
Yeah.
And the whole conceit is, whatever, who fucking cares what the way this goes, but we're just going to all just make jokes the whole damn thing. Yeah. And you're like, oh, that's hilarious the first time you see it. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's hilarious the second time you see it. Then you go back years later. Yeah. Oh, that show's still on the air. Oh, it's still going. Man, if I had to watch this every week, I would go crackers.
It's kind of like this show.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Try to freshen it up a little bit.
We try to freshen it up, but I can only imagine people get worn out from this show after a while.
As they should. Look, you shouldn't listen to every episode of any podcast.
No.
You shouldn't. No. You know, like, just take a break, come back later. That's absolutely fine.
We'll still be here.
We'll still be here.
We'll probably be talking about this again.
People say that actually to me and are like, yeah, I missed the last three. I'm really sorry. That's fine. There's no plot line. We're not Game of Thrones. You don't have to worry, like, do you have the dragons yet? No, it doesn't fucking matter. Just, like, tune in whenever. It'll be fine.
We always have the dragon.
Oh, I guess we are. Yeah. We are dragon related.
Yeah,
good for us.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this one question. Like, when you were a young man, everyone take a drink.
42.
When you were doing your generic drivel magazines, your zine work.
In the zine days.
You were doing comedy-based magazines.
It's to a degree.
For the most, there was interviews.
It had, yeah, we were part of the quote unquote punk scene of the day. So this would have been 82 to 84, I guess, around 84.
Okay.
So sort of the tail end of
young
the
listeners
hardcore.
Are now going, oh my gosh, we now realize how old you are. That's fine.
That's okay, people. I'm old.
Hey, man, it's better than the alternative. Better than the alternative.
Being young?
No, alternative music.
That would be terrible.
It's better than alternative music.
Oh my God, yes.
Am I right?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Mumford and Sons, P. You. Go on.
The Amazing Mumford from Sesame Street.
Yeehaw.
He was the Doug Henning of his time.
He was the Doug Henson of his time.
Fuck, man. I can't think of nothing.
He sold insurance.
Damn it.
In Saskatoon.
I'm so tired.
I remember that character in Sesame Street, the insurance salesman.
Oh, so tired.
Hey, kid, you want a policy?
Yeah, that guy. You don't see him on the show anymore. Yeah. Talking to strangers became less cool. Okay. So when you were publishing your generic drivel magazine, did you also publish one called Golf Carts?
No, never did Golf Carts. We did one issue of one called Devil's Advocate.
Devil's Advocate. Okay. Yeah. So who were your influences in the zine scene when you were doing that kind of stuff? What made you go to – a young David Dedrick went, me too. Like, what did you read and went, I can do that. And off to the Xerox shop you went. By the way, was it a Kinko's? Where did you copy these things?
There was no Kinko's.
You went to a printer.
Minute Maid, probably, or something like that.
You went to an orange juice stand.
Minute Maid, M-A-D-E.
Oh.
Took a minute to make your copies.
Okay.
I don't remember Kinko's around in that time. So
no.
You just went to a place that wasn't open 24 hours. And our last couple were offset, were published offset.
Okay.
So they're printed as a newspaper.
Proper printer.
Yeah. All right, we had a huge amount of them that probably are still sitting in someone's basement.
Very nice. Oh, by the way, let me tell you just quickly before we get back to you.
Mm-hmm.
This was kind of a nice thing. I'm in Ottawa, right?
Okay.
All right, I'm doing the Ottawa Comic Con this summer. I can tell you more stuff about that later. We're still going to get back to you. Don't worry, David.
No, well, I would like to hear about Ottawa, but okay, let's just tell you this really quick.
All I'm going to tell you is this.
Okay.
So I'm in Ottawa. I'm sitting behind my desky desk there. I'm signing.
Are you sure? Table, perhaps?
Yeah, let's go table.
Okay.
I got some Sneaky Dragon shirts. I'm selling a couple of them.
Nice.
People like the Sneaky Dragon shirts, by the way. Nice design. By the way, if you guys want a Sneaky Dragon shirt, we'll hook you up. And quite a few people, and by that I mean like five, came up to me and were fans of my old Xerox.
That's awesome.
Well, it's like, how the hell do they get them? I've got all of them at home. I've got, you know, a bunch of them at home.
Well,
they were quoting things from I to me. And it was like, how in the, like, I swear,
well,
folks, I printed 60 of these damn things. and I had, it was just a ridiculous percentage of people.
But you must have sent them to other places.
I guess I did.
Did you send them to, like, The Beguiling or something like that?
Here's the thing. I remember going to the Beguiling guys and having some and having them basically give me the old snooty snoot nose up in the air about I'm not giving a fuck. I might have just let them have them anyway and just went, well, I don't want to carry them home.
Yeah, yeah.
Just leave them at the door and then run out and cry and go over to Honest Ed's and just have a good weep
and have some pizza
across the street.
You probably don't want to be reminded, but you had a big supporter in Dave Sim.
Mm.
You know, he mentioned you more than once in Cerebus.
Did he?
Yeah.
Well, I know I was in the back of...
You were in the back of it, but he also talked about your actual comic as well. Talked about
Did he?
Yeah.
What did he say? I don't remember that.
I don't remember now either, but he did talk about it. I do remember that.
He went, boys write good.
So you probably might have got orders from that.
Yeah, it's possibly. I had some nice people say some nice things about some nice stuff. But it was a surprise to me to have people come up to me and then say that. And enough people that it was like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Strange. Okay, back to young David Dedrick.
That's great.
Is sitting in his room with a dream.
I don't want to say anything, but, you know, David Lasky loved Rounders.
Yes, he did.
But anyway.
Yeah, he loved the movie Rounders.
He loves that movie with Matt Damon, right?
Yeah.
I hated that movie because it stole the name of my comic that I was no longer doing. And I just felt like, man, I lost the march on that. But anyway,
Way you could publish it again.
Things that influenced us were more.
Now you're saying us.
I did it with a friend named Rob Repsol.
Okay.
And in fact, I'd say he had more to do with generic drivel than I did in terms of getting it going. Because I'm not a person who gets things going. I'm a person who likes to jump on the bus once it's moving down the street.
Right. You do not like to get this party started.
I do not like to get the party started. I don't. Because I can't do that thing with my hands crooked over my head. Shaking my booty, kind of.
Let's right. Get That's not your booty.
That's not my thing. I can't. I have no booty.
All right.
And because what it was is I was selling. We had been talking about doing it, and then I had
big talk at school. Say, at a school, you were doing it. We should do it.
He was more of a neighborhood friend because he was actually two grades younger than he was in my youngest brother's grade.
Right.
So we actually never went to school at the same time.
We should really do this, Dave.
Yeah. That's right. So I went selling books in Alberta, and when I came back,
right, selling encyclopedias,
he had done the first issue.
Ah.
And I was like, well, this is great, but let's do it a little better.
Now, by done, do you mean he had printed it?
He printed it. He did everything. He did it all himself.
Was your name on it in any way?
No, no.
Nothing to do with you?
Nothing to do with me at all.
All right. So first issue is out. You've missed that bus.
I missed that bus.
You're
no,
back.
I did not miss the bus.
Encyclopedias in hand.
I jumped on the bus. And I just, you know, I said, well, I'll do the design and we'll...
And the research, because I've got encyclopedias.
And I've got encyclopedias. And let's, you know, so we started typing it out rather than doing a handwritten or, you know... And then I would...
Oh, handwritten. Who are you, Robin Bougie?
I would do... I would photocopy what is it? Letraset?
Yeah.
Do you remember they had like a big catalog of all their fonts?
Yeah.
I would photocopy it, and then I would cut the letters out and paste them individually down to make the headlines.
My God.
That was quite time consuming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you are not a million miles away from a Gutenberg printing press at that point.
Well, I mean, there was no computers at that point. I mean, there were computers, but there's no
one
used computers.
There was the Univac. Took up half a room.
That's right.
It would run incredibly hot. You could run it for 5 minutes, and then the whole room would just start to, like, everyone perspire.
You could use a computer to do your fanzine, but
right.
There's only so many people who want to see a Woodstock made out of X's and O's, or Charlie Brown, or, you know, or the Mona Lisa formed with letters, right? So then we started doing it. We would send out questionnaires to bands and other places, and we actually started getting records sent to us for reviews and stuff like that. And then that's how I met David M. from No Fun.
Right.
Because...
Former guest of the show.
Former friend of the show, David M. we wanted to meet him because we really liked the music. And at that time, that was sort of their glory days here on college radio. They had their number one album on college radio.
Right.
And all across Canada, not just here. And so we were, you know, we really wanted to meet them. So we went to his house in Surrey and, kind of inserted ourselves into the, but he started writing for us. The guitar player in the band, Paul Lee, he started drawing cartoons for us. Another guy who was a local artist who was kind of associated with them, Arg, he started drawing and writing for us, doing concert reviews. And he reviewed the Turtles for one of our issues. And I was like, who are the Turtles? I had no idea who they were. I mean,
right.
I was, at that point, I was still totally wrapped up in my contemporary, my age group's music, even though it was sort of the alternative, whatever, the Smiths and Black Flag or whatever. I was told, you know,
now,
I had no knowledge.
Were you an editor by this point?
Oh, yeah.
Now, were you open as an editor to this new music that you had no idea what you're talking about?
Not much.
And so you just, he wrote this thing and you were like,
No, no, I was like, oh, okay, whatever. Like, I mean, it was whatever.
Sounds like you're open to it then.
Okay. Okay. It was he and I who went to meet Big Daddy Roth.
Right.
At a car dealership here in Vancouver. And there was no one else there. It was just us, basically. So we did a little interview with him. We got to meet REM. We buttonholed Peter Buck in the bathroom at the Commodore. And since he was peeing, he thought...
Now, when you say you buttonholed, what does that
mean?
In the 80s, when you go into a bathroom and buttonhole somebody, what does that mean?
We surrounded
him... Was that a smaller version of a glory hole?
No, no.
Okay.
We surrounded him at the urinal. Introduced ourselves.
Right.
I'm not joking.
Okay.
Introduced
you surrounded
ourselves.
Him with pee so he could not cross
and he
your
gave
streams.
He gave us a pass to the show. I'm not joking.
I'm not. I know you're not joking.
We had backstage passes.
Yeah.
That you got to stick onto your jacket or whatever. I still have mine. And I got to go backstage and talk to REM, meet Michael Stipe, and do an interview with him.
This was when he had hair.
This was during the Reckoning tour. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This was after the second album.
Nice head of hair.
Because to be honest, after the second album, I completely lost interest in REM. I loved their first two albums.
Right.
And I thought they were the greatest thing since sliced bread. And then they put out Fables of the Reconstruction.
And then you stopped following them into washrooms.
I said, it wasn't even worth seeing him pee. It wasn't even worth it. Although I met Peter Buck at a local bookstore here, Chapters, on Robson Street. He was in front of me in line, and I introduced myself. And he remembered me.
Oh, nice.
From that time. And what's great is that even though they were a pretty successful group, you know, they were on their way up, obviously, that they were willing to, A, talk to two teenage boys who trapped them in a bathroom, give us passes, and do an interview with us.
Right.
And we were so dumb, we didn't even have a camera with us. The front cover was this horrible Stickman caricature I did of the band with this little pretend note saying, not good enough, from the editor.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was.
That doesn't surprise me. Like most times, you know, you run into an artist, and if they're a true artist, and they see that you are another creator of something, yeah. whatever that is, if you're yeah. a painter, a photographer, whatever you are, if you're legit and you're mm-hmm. passionate, they recognize that. That's part of what they are. I mean, they didn't just get there casually.
Well, that's something that David M. always says is. He says, I know how hard it is to create something.
Yeah.
So whatever you're doing, I think it's great.
Even failure takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're successful, oh my gosh, you've had to be obsessed. And mm-hmm. you see that obsession in someone else. And if the obsession isn't camping out in front of your house and like, you know, making your cat into a doll, you know.
David eventually talked me out of doing that.
So. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I remember, I was less legit than you. I would pretend to be.
We did this together.
No, I know. I did like one issue of your thing.
No. I mean, I went with you to quite a few of these.
Yeah. But like, you're right. I would fake being a reviewer for plays, and I would go to see plays, and then I would like fake interview people afterwards, and maybe sometimes I would print them,
yeah.
you know, the interviews. But it was just my excuse for like getting to know people. You know, who's it? And it's interesting, listening to an interview with Judd Apatow, he used to do the same thing. He wanted to meet stand-up comedians. So with his school, he would pretend, like he would, you know, just record interviews and say, I'm with the high school, da-da-da. Can I talk to you, Gary Shandling, Jerry Seinfeld, whatever. And he still got some of these interviews and he feels a little embarrassed about some of them. But yeah, you're so passionate about this thing that, you know, they recognize it and da-da-da-da. It was like, I'll just tell you one other Ottawa thing real fast.
Oh, sure.
Okay. So P and I go down to Ottawa.
Everyone wants to hear this, Ian.
No, I don't think they do.
Okay.
So P and I go to Ottawa and we're in a car with a guy who's incredibly handsome and full of arm muscles.
Okay.
And
you don't want to say a name?
Well, I will in a second. Okay. But at this point in the story, I didn't know who he was.
Oh, I see.
So I'm just talking to the person who's driving us and we're just...
Who is thinner and more approachable.
Yeah. And gangly. Well, no, the reason was because the other guy was on his phone like with something that was really important, so didn't want to bother him.
Yeah.
So, but
he's playing Angry Birds.
But as he's done and comes out of the car, you know, we do the hellos and he's like, oh, I'm sorry for... You know, and I'm not doing the accent. He's got a New Zealand accent. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. So rude.
He said, where's the car?
So, yeah. He's so, you know, so rude. And I was like, no, how you doing? And we introduce ourselves and say, you know, I'm a writer and comedian and P is an artist. And he's like, oh, that's great. You know, I was like, so sorry. I know I should probably recognize you, but yeah. And he tells me what he's done. And he's like, he's currently on the TV show Arrow. He was on Spartacus and he was in The Hobbit. As like the orc with missing an arm, you know, the mean orc, you know, that guy.
I think he's a goblin, isn't he?
Is it?
Are there orcs yet in that, or are they just goblins?
I think he's...
Or maybe he is an orc.
I think he is an orc.
Okay.
And his name was Manu Bennett.
That's the name of the orc?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. So no. I missed that. I don't think the name
that's his
song,
actual. That's
we'll find
actual
out
name.
In part two, probably.
And really super, super sweet guy, but you don't want to be too. And what do you do? And what's that like? And well, that's something. You're just like, okay, let's all just pretend like you just didn't say three amazing credits.
Yeah.
And we're all going to just be casual here and everything's cool. And we'll just talk about the environment and things like we're people.
Yeah.
Boom, boom. That's what you do. So we go in, you know, he's going to get his room over there.
Trees are pretty great.
Yeah. And we're getting our thing. And da-da-da, and we've parted ways, and all is well with the world. Yeah. We've said our hellos. Funny story. We can – not funny story, but we can mention that we met this guy.
Yeah.
And when I do online to my friend Joanne in New York
– I saw that.
Yeah. She's like, oh, my God. He's the handsomest guy.
All caps.
In the universe.
All caps.
I'm like, oh, that's interesting.
Every response
right.
to that was all caps.
I'm much more interested that we went for a meal right after that, and we're sitting one table over from Billy Dee Williams. That, to me, is super cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So next.
You betrayed Anne.
That's right. And later war is closed for some reason. We don't know why in that movie. You ever see that in the movie?
Which movie?
Well, in Empire, after Han is Han.
Remember, I've seen it twice.
It's frozen.
Okay.
Okay. Lando is then later in the Millennium Falcon. He's driving it, which makes sense because it used to be his thing.
Yeah.
But he's wearing an outfit. It's Han's outfit.
Pilot clothes.
I don't think it's pilot clothes.
It's his pilot clothes.
Okay, whatever. So anyway, the next day we go down.
Hero worship.
First of all, here's the other thing about that. They put us in a boardroom.
He was then Hando Calrissian.
Yes, it was.
Okay.
But it's kind of a big deal that we're in a boardroom, don't you think? That I'm mentioning that part of the story? Can we acknowledge that was interesting? I know you're busy. In your own world.
I was having my fun.
I know you're doing your own little dance in your head.
But so anyway, in your hotel room, you had what?
We're a boardroom.
You
we walk
were a boardroom.
In and there's a full boardroom.
Yeah.
And there's like eight chairs around the table.
Eight people sitting around the table having a board meeting.
That's right. And they're all supervillains.
They're chairman of the board.
Yes. But no, that was really weird. Like, we had a hotel room that was half boardroom.
It's crazy.
That's strange. Anyway, so the next day we go downstairs and we're having our breakfast before we go out to the thing. Mm-hmm. And Manu is just walking by. Yeah. And he seems to be like, you know, waiting for someone that's not showing up. And so we just give him a little wave and just like, hey, how's it going? Because we see each other. And like, okay, and that's the way it's going to be. And he's like, hi, what are you guys doing? And so he comes and sits down. I was like, yeah, I'm waiting for a guy. I got an autograph session in like, I don't know, 20 minutes. And no one's coming. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, he should be picking you up. And we end up talking and we really end up talking for like about an hour.
Wow.
And it's because we're all just shooting around ideas of things we're working on and things he's working on.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, yeah, you know what? The difference between us is, one, you work out 4 hours a day and are one of the handsomest men on the planet and be in Spartacus, a show with no shirts. But when it comes down to it, we all have that same passion for what we do. And once you have that connection, you're just like, like you immediately bond. And yeah, we really got on well.
You all took off your shirts.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cause you know, you don't want to make them feel uncomfortable.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then, he went, oh, I'm really late for my autograph set. And so, you know, he found somebody and they took him off to sign autographs for an enormous lineup of people that were like,
he's an Arrow.
Yeah.
I've never seen it, but
he plays Deathstroke in Arrow.
Oh, is that the guy who has like a one thing target kind of over his eye?
And that's Deadlock. That's
Deadbolt.
Deadbeat. Yeah, it's Deadbeat Dad.
Deadbeat Dad.
What he does is he abandons children.
Yeah.
No, this guy is Deathstroke. He used to be a villain on the Teen Titans. Back in the day in the 80s and Teen Titans Go as well. But he's in this, Slade Wilson, that's who he is in there.
Handstroke? That's what his name was, right?
Handstroke?
I can't.
Are you doing a dirty joke?
No, what's the name of his character?
Deathstroke.
Deathstroke.
Yeah, Handstroke. He gives hand jobs to the superheroes and stops right before they're done and they're so frustrated.
Blue balls.
Yeah, and then he goes off and like, I didn't want you to do this, but now that you are, could you just finish me off? It's like, no, I can't, Green Arrow. Now you're Blue Arrow.
So I haven't seen Spartacus either. Was he Spartacus or was just one of the other?
No, he's one of the other guys.
Okay.
And then unfortunately someone
were on the show. Were they all Spartacus?
Yeah, there you go. Someone on the show unfortunately passed away and so that kind of ended.
Oh, really?
Ended that, yeah.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, someone died, I believe, of cancer, and that was the end of that show.
Okay.
But it was a really intense, interesting, weird show, which, again, not a shirt to be found on the fellas or the ladies.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, back to your nerdy upbringings. Going from the handsome, well-tanned man to your pasty, youthful self, how many issues did you end up completing of your magazines or newspapers?
I think all together we did 10.
Well, that's pretty good.
It is really good. I mean,
that is really good.
We were just doing it.
You always make a big deal that I did like 18 comics and like you did 10 like magazines. That's really quite good.
But one of the best.
Were you always waiting for a compliment back whenever you say that to me? Hey, Ian, he did 18 of this. And he's like, waiting. As he knows, I did 10 issues of, well, I guess that compliment ain't coming. Awkward. I'll say it again later in public and see if he brings it up. Nope. Apparently not.
Yep.
Nope.
Yep. No.
You know, Ian, when I throw in Rounders and We're So Jar and Adam and Steve, I kind of matched your not going to do. Nope. Okay. That's fine. You used to host a radio show as well. Always bring up your radio show. Never bring up my. That's fine.
That's right. Ian doesn't log roll.
Nope.
No log rolling here.
Nope.
Just let you fall in the water.
That's right.
Was I supposed to run on the log too? Sorry, I went backwards when you were going forward.
That's my improv thing is you're throwing me a little suggestion. I'm catching it, putting it in my pocket, walking away.
One of the best things that I did when we were doing the fanzine is that I decided I was going to go cover the SOCRED leadership convention that was at Whistler, which is the local.
Just a quick, for those of you that do not live in British Columbia, here's how lefty we are in British Columbia.
Yeah.
We just had the Liberals win and everyone went, oh, the right wingers took it. That the Liberals were as right wing as we get now. Yeah. The really lefty NDP had the votes taken away by the really, really lefty Green Party.
Yeah.
So it didn't make enough. And the Conservative Party got nothing.
Yeah, they kind of self-destructed.
Nothing
more
at
than
all.
The NDP to self-destructed. During
right,
that
they were election. So conservative they actually didn't come out to say who they were. Yeah. So no one knew who they were. Okay, but back in these days, you're talking about we had a legitimate kind of righter winger party than you would think.
Well, they weren't really right wing because they were a coalition party, the SOCREDs. Because what happened was because of the NDP threat in that of the time. the conservatives and the liberals formed one party under the Socred banner.
Right.
Because the Socred leader was a very charismatic leader.
Is this Van der Zand?
W.A.C. Bennett.
Ah, very good.
This is way back in the day.
Very good.
And he kind of formed this party that was like the steamroller party for the next 30 years of British Columbia history, right? And so I thought it would be kind of fun to go and do this convention because
you were a big right winger back then.
Because I was a big right winger back then.
As most young people are.
All teenagers.
Let's keep it the same, you said.
You never want to argue with your dad over politics.
That's right.
That would be crazy.
That's right. Things are great as is, says the youth.
That's right. Come on, Dad. Let's agree on this, that things should be more conservative.
And let's listen to your albums.
We did do that a lot. But so I took the bus to this area of Vancouver the lower mainland of Vancouver called Richmond, which is the most bus unfriendly part of the lower mainland.
Yeah.
There are no sidewalks there.
No, you will. You have to walk through a series of ditches.
That's right. Once you get off the bus, 5 miles from your destination,
right.
Then you have to make a precarious journey on a narrow path,
yeah.
Beside a speeding freeway and a 15-foot ditch.
Right. And at the bottom of the ditch are ditch possums.
Possums. Oh,
just waiting.
Gnashing their teeth. That's right. The red beady eyes are looking up at you. So I went to the Socred headquarters, which were there.
Right.
And they were just like the dearest people I've ever had to deal with. They were
They were
nice.
Deer-like. They were skittish, big eyes,
they were like,
and at a salt lick.
They were like my grandma, if my grandma was not a cold, 1930s depression era woman, right? Like,
okay.
Like they were just like these.
I hope she's not a listener.
She's not a listener. She's still alive, but she doesn't listen to the show.
Oh. Try to work on her. We could use it.
Much of anything.
We could use the older demographic.
We could use the older demographic.
They got money.
And they know who Fred Allen is.
Does she want a t-shirt?
She might.
Yeah, she would actually get your jokes.
But my
she?
Jokes? You were the one doing the, oops. So I went to this.
How many times have you done Rochester on this show?
Once.
Too many. Have you done Rochester more times than you've published a magazine?
I think that you've mixed up my Rochester and my Step and Fetch It.
All right.
Because, you know.
Once again, get your grandma to listen to this one. She'll enjoy it. Please continue.
So the first black millionaire, first entertainer millionaire, Step and Fetch It.
Oh, nice.
But anyway, so I went to the Socred headquarters and yeah, there's this dear little old lady. And she was confused about what I wanted.
About why a young person.
Yeah. What? And who do you represent? I'm like, well, I come from we do a fanzine. It's called Generic Drivel.
Well, a fanzine? What's that all about?
And so she's like, but you know, after I explained it to her, she's like, oh, okay, that's fine.
You should have said, we do a newspaper.
So.
You don't say fanzine. What the hell's that?
I'm honest. So.
You can be honest, but it's also a newspaper.
I got a press pass.
Right.
From them.
You put it over your REM one.
I put it over my REM one. And then I went up to Whistler. I took the bus up there and I stayed.
Wow.
I stayed over a bike shop. I had to share a bunk bed. I had the top and this other guy had the bottom.
With a serial killer.
And he was like he was a crazy libertarian. Like, just crazy guy.
Right.
And he's one of those guys who speaks in this sort of flat monotone. Yeah, you know, government's too much government around, you know. You know, if you can find some land and live there for a year, that's your property, right? They can't take it away from you then.
Yeah, this you can. True. Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah, you can.
Hey, whatever, man.
It was always great whenever someone told you, like, listen, here's the law. And they tell you the law, and the law is in no way the law. It was the same law. It was the same kind of guy who in school, take a drink, we're talking about school, who in school was like, hey, you know what, Dave?
Yeah.
If your teacher doesn't show up for 15 minutes, you're free to go. That's the law.
That's the law.
That's the law of children's amnesty. You can just go, well, I'm 12. I guess I'm free to leave school.
Yeah.
If my teacher doesn't show up, I shouldn't go to, say, the principal and mention maybe my teacher's dead or something's happening. Nope. Well, off to the mall we all go because we're free.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the way it works. Anyway, sorry, you were talking.
Well, you know, the thing is he's probably was about 5 years older than me, so he spoke with a voice of authority.
Oh, indeed.
Because I was just like I was an 18-year-old kid, and he was
Can I have the top bunk? There's no difference between the top and bottom bunk. We're all equal.
What was interesting, though, is that the reporters who were there, like from the province and the Vancouver Sun, they loved me.
Why is that?
I don't know. They just thought it was great that I
youthful
was there.
Youthful energy gave a damn.
Yeah, I was
reminded,
there.
Once again, I think reminded you of them before they got bitter.
They like snuck me into a bar at Whistler. I don't drink, of course, but you know,
that seems the wrong thing for them to do.
I got to watch them guzzle away as journalists were wont to do, especially in those days.
All right.
But it was great. Like it was, and I actually made like a totally accurate prediction of what was going to happen after with the election. And I didn't print it in the magazine, because I just instead I did like a big parody of my trip there. And I wish I'd been a bit more accurate, like in terms of my guesses of what was going to happen, because it would have been brilliant. Because what happened was because the Socrates had a kind of crazy wing of the party, what happened was...
What was the crazy wing like?
The crazy wing was the kind of right-wing Bible Belt Dutch farmer voter that made a big part of the party at that time.
Okay.
So you kind of think you're Mennonite, Christian, right-wing, out there in the rural areas voters.
Right.
And so they made up a large part of who eventually won the party nomination.
Right. Now, let me just ask you one other quick question. Sure. Your libertarian friend, Bottom Bunk Bob.
Yeah.
Was he
Triple B.
Was he pro the Socreds because they were, you know, they weren't like a lot of give you a bunch of free stuff government. They were, you know, they were more your own, buddy.
It depended who was there, right? Like there were guys who were. There were some people, like the guy who got the nomination, Bill Van Der Zandt, who were incredibly right-wing.
Yeah.
And there were other people who were very center.
Now, a libertarian, though, who would he be going for back then?
Very right-wing.
Right.
Because they're a little government. They didn't want government at all in your life, right?
Okay.
Like, you know, drugs in the street, child pornography, all the place, they don't care.
Okay, yeah, but they would also be like, okay, like your Van Der Zandt government would be like saying, you know, the gay folks want to get married and they want to do this and want to do that. Well,
yeah,
no,
they would
no
want,
dice.
Yeah, they're not,
no dice.
They're not,
they don't care.
They're not socially conservative.
Social libertarian as well as a fiscal libertarian.
Right,
okay.
Right, yeah.
All right. So continue on with your story, sir.
So then what happened in this election was there was...
Do you
was
still keep in touch with him?
with
Bottom Bunk Bob.
With Triple B, as I like to call him? I do. I leave a note in a mailbox. And then it's, you know, it's usually gone within a few days.
Yeah. Hey, BB gun. How's it going?
When he's passing through, he picks it up on his way to his squat.
Right.
Got
he's just
set
got
up in some brush.
If he sits for 3 hours on a piece of land,
piece of land.
It is his.
It's his.
So you just got to push him off that land fast.
Fast. Yeah. Yeah.
He, you know what? He actually lives in a lot of hotels that he owns.
Although we know a lady who had her own, has acreage.
Yeah.
Out in another part of the Lower Mainland called Maple Ridge.
Okay.
And
quit bragging.
Haney.
Yeah.
But anyway, she has acreage out there. And so one day, it's pretty big property. And one day she discovered that a man was living on her property in this corner. He decided to turn it into his own little squat.
Every woman's dream.
And so, so she, you know, didn't want him living there.
No, you don't.
So she asked the police to remove him, and they wouldn't. They would not remove him from the property. This was their advice. When he's gone, take his stuff and throw it off your land.
Okay.
So that's what she had to do. She had to, like, keep her eye open. And one day he was gone.
Right.
Doing whatever, you know, buying drugs or getting cans or whatever.
Right.
And she took all his stuff and just threw it out of her property onto the road. And he took it and he left. I guess he took that as a hint.
Oh, very good.
That he wasn't wanted there.
Here's the other way you could have done it is you could have left a pot, like, opened your door.
Yeah.
Left a hot pie, like, just inside the door.
Yeah.
He
yeah.
comes in, gets uh-huh. the pie, shoot him dead. I think technically you could do that.
You can do that. As a policeman once said to me, my friend and I, if you do that, bury him far away and don't tell me about it.
Well, you just
this
give
is
him
an actual quote from a policeman.
Wow.
To a friend and I,
I was going
to
say, just put him with the ditch possums.
When, my friend,
that's a terrible thing for
true.
A cop to
my
say.
My friend's place was broken into.
Yeah.
And he mentioned that how much he'd like to kill these people. And he wished he'd been there and they would be dead. And the cop's response was, well, if you do that, make sure you bury them at the end of your property and don't tell me about it.
Yeah, don't tell him about it. Well, what would you? Okay. There's two. Look, man. Here's the problem with that advice. One,
what
if you bury the guy, you're not going to call the cops and say
I
buried
I don't
him.
Think you should.
So
no, he's saying you shouldn't do that. It's good advice.
What is good advice?
If you kill someone and bury them at the end of your property,
right?
Do not call the police.
No, of course you don't. You don't even have to say that though. If you're in the burying mood, you're not going to be like telling him because then the cops have to dig him
so
up and now they're mad at you.
What you're telling me is my coloring book, things not to do. I should take out that section.
Yeah, your things not to do. It's weird that Mountain Dew sponsored that coloring book.
If you kill someone.
Don't do the do.
If you kill someone.
Yeah.
And you bury them in the back of your
property.
Right,
that's bad luck.
Don't call the police.
Mm-hmm. All right, back to your story.
So,
how are we doing on time, by the way?
We've wasted a lot of time.
Okay, sounds good. All right.
Do you want to wrap her up soon?
No, in a bit, yeah, but go ahead.
Well, I think I kind of... Did I finish the story?
No. So
oh,
you're there.
No. So then what happened was, okay, so the guy who won the nomination, he wasn't in the lead, but he kind of won the next vote.
All right.
So with another guy. So there's two guys, and then there was a longtime party stalwart lady, and she had a lot of followers as well.
Okay.
So she was out of the running. So it was up to her to tell her followers where to go. I mean, it was up to them to choose, but, you know, they'll take
advice. Give the advice. Yeah, throw your votes to this person. And there you go.
The one guy was, he was a conservative, a federal conservative politician who had, you know, kind of come in as to take over the leadership of the Socreds. The other guy was kind of a longtime leader as well. So she put her votes to him, to the longtime guy. So this other guy, of course, lost. And then the guy was nominated. But I remember saying to someone there, I said, well, this is terrible. I said, he's going to win because he's a charismatic guy, but he's a nut job.
Mm-hmm.
So what he's going to do is he's going to win the election, and then he's going to, you know, the whole party's going to fragment because he's too divisive, because he's just too far out there.
Right, right.
You need a central person who can bring those opposites together, right?
Right.
Because seriously, the party was liberal people and conservative people. So if you have someone who's really out there offending all the liberals, well, the party's not going to work. So that's exactly what happened, right?
Right.
The Socred Party started to fragment. The Liberal Party formed. People left the Socreds and went to the Liberal Party, and the Liberal Party became the next kind of
right-of-center
party.
Today.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's kind of like what goes on in the States in that, the ones that do well at first are the nuts, the extreme, let's make children janitors. that kind of stuff works. Also, because what are you going to cover if you're a news person? Mm-hmm. You've got like 2 minutes to cover things.
Yeah.
Are you going to cover the guy who's talking about his moon base? Are you going to talk about the person with reasonable ideas for healthcare system? You're going to go like, Moony Joe.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Moon Man.
Because you know something about Moon Man. He knows once you go in space, you can do David Bowie songs. Yeah, you can write a new Da Vinci Code 2. You can just do whatever you want. It's sky's the limit, man. It's
ground control to the moon, man.
Well, here's, you know who'd be happy on the moon with that kind of world? Mm-hmm. Your libertarian guy.
Yeah.
Like Bottom Bunk Bob. If you get him up to the moon, first of all, if he's on the moon for longer than a day, he owns the moon.
He owns the moon. That's right.
that's space.
You know, if you can get to the moon and you can stay there for a day, it's all yours.
Yeah, that's moon salvage laws. That's space salvage laws.
Ground control to Bottom Bunk Bob.
Wasn't it nice how well he sang too? Like he sang very well, mm-hmm. did the guitar nice. It's like
he
beautiful.
He was lip syncing.
Yeah, I realized it wasn't live because it had edits.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that.
Okay,
Well, let me ask you this.
I think he recorded it here, and then it was.
I'm going to assume that
there,
because
right?
I don't think they had the space for a recording studio
and the band to be there too.
Yeah, I'm betting
all these guys in spacesuits playing drums. They were outside playing because they couldn't fit in the capsule.
Wow, that's good. Good sound.
They were,
good sound. What are the acoustics like in the vacuum of space?
You have to be really careful because if you hit
play really loud.
If you play the tom too hard, it pushes you out into space. And of course, there's no gravity. You just keep floating away.
Well, that's how Keith Moon died.
That's right.
And that's why they named the moon after him.
That's correct. That's
in tribute. They went like, oh, that poor guy.
Yeah.
You know what? We should name this big rock out here. But we call it Big Rock. You know what? From this point on, we're calling it the moon.
Calling it Keith Moon.
After Keith Moon.
Yeah.
A lot of young people don't know that's for that.
Everybody take a drink.
All right. You know, folks, thanks very much for listening to our Sleepy Dragon today. I think you've learned a lot about Canadian politics. You've learned a lot about comic books, European comic books.
Yeah.
We've learned a lot about Dave's youth and how many things he actually published. By the way, let me just ask you this.
Sure.
Sorry, I'm shaking your microphone right now.
Yeah, it was.
Sorry, does that bother you when I do that?
It's okay. Earthquake!
Now, do you still have those magazines?
I have a few of them.
Do you? How many do you have, would you say?
Five?
Six?
Around five of them.
Well, let me just say, scan them in and put them on the internet.
Meh.
Well, that's a good point. Point well made.
Meh.
It sounds like you've got some articles there that would be very interesting.
Oh, there's
like,
some fun stuff.
I mean, if nothing
else. The Henry Rollins scorecard is good.
Yeah, like something like your REM thing. Mm-hmm. For crying out loud, people would go. Here's the thing, Dave. Look, you and I do this podcast.
Yes.
And it's called Sneaky Dragon.
It's true.
We need to bring people to our website.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Do we?
Now, what you do is you put up your old Henry Rollins, you put up your old REMs, and then you like linkity link, and people go, where's that? It's on the Sneaky Dragon web. Well, what the heck's that about? It's a podcast. Let's just give it a listen. And then all of a sudden.
We didn't even talk about REM or Henry Rollins.
Yeah. Well, we just did.
I have a great picture of Henry
Rollins. You just did. So. We just talked about REM. We talked about REM through this whole damn episode. Boom. Done.
At the end of the concert. One of the many that were done, because in those days, Black Flag were in town every 4 months without a break. But he at the end of the show, he said, would you mind taking a picture, like having a picture taken with our fanzine?
Right.
So he took it and he slapped it on his sweaty chest and it stuck there. And then that's the picture.
Exactly.
It's great.
Now, Dave, you're keeping that to yourself at your home. Where the family is going, we've seen it. We don't want to see it again, Papa.
Yeah, they don't want to see it.
And you know what? The possums in the house are going to break in. We have a lot of possums in BC. Are going to start eating away at it. Mm-hmm. My advice to you, sir,
okay,
is to take the REM and the Henry Rollins interviews, yep, put them on our website.
Okay.
Makes sense for this week. I'm not going to make you dig through your diggings.
I'll have to go to my parents' house and look through the crawl space.
There you go.
It's a problem.
Well, get them out of the crawl space and do a scanny scan.
Uh-huh.
Boom, boom. And there you go.
I'll put the newspaper article about us too.
Right. I don't know if there was one. Is there a newspaper article about you?
Yeah, we got written up in the Vancouver
Sun. There you go. Yeah. You take that. Now people who like the Henry Rollins and the REM are going to be la da 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 da.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you not want people to listen to this show?
Nah, I like
nah neither do I. I don't give a fuck.
I like being underground.
Yeah, all right. Sounds good.
We're alternative, man.
Okay.
We're alternative to popular.
We are. We applied for a Canadian Comedy Award. We're going to see what happens. We'll see. You know.
Yeah, well, it's shoo-in.
Well, I'm hoping. If we do get nominated, we're going to sell out, and we're going to sell out hard.
Yes.
We're going to cash in.
Oh, for sure.
Cha-ching. Wow. That's what we're going to be doing.
I'm all there. I'm with you.
All right. Sounds good.
Like I always said, when this stops being fun, I expect to get paid.
Okay. That sounds fine. Well, that brings us to the end of another edition of Sneaky Sleepy Dragon. If you've not had enough of us and you're like, I want more, where can I see you in person? I don't want to pay money for it this time. I don't want to have to pay money to come to see you. Well, listen, we got a thing called Vancouver. Something, something, something. Come to it. Wait, what's it called? VanCAF.
Let's go. Yeah, Vancouver Comics Arts Festival.
That's correct.
VanCAF is the short name for it.
And what is the date?
It's on it's May 25th, 26th.
Okay.
Is the actual
But
VanCAF.
When are we there?
We are there on May 26th,
yep,
at 3 o'clock in 3 the
o'clock.
Afternoon. Plenty of time for sleeping in for everybody.
Dave, I just paid a lot of money on my taxes. What am I going to do?
Well,
how do I get in?
When you get there,
yeah,
here's the admission, free.
What? Free.
What if I told you it would cost you as much it would cost you to not buy a cup of coffee every day for a month?
You know, Dave, as a libertarian, I like this idea. By the way, we're at the Roundhouse, which has a lot of trains.
Yeah.
If you sit on one of those trains for 1 hour, mm-hmm, the train is yours.
The train is yours.
But you have to drive the train out.
Yeah, you have to take the train out of there.
Yes.
And they're steam powered. So my advice is if you do that, bring your friend Stoker Joe.
Yeah. Or at least a hot cup of tea.
A hot cup of tea.
That'll take you probably about half a block, and that's as far as
that's
you go.
That's about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll be on at 3 o'clock. Admission is free.
Yeah. Just us?
Just us. What do you mean, just us?
Will it just be
it's
us?
Free for
us?
Everyone.
No, I mean, but
it's
will it just be us
everybody
doing the show?
No, I'll have a guest, Colin Upton, world famous comic book artist. And speaking of someone who's done a lot of comics,
yeah,
and speaking of someone who is from the do-it-yourself era of mini comics and stuff like that, I would say that Colin Upton is one of the kings of mini comics.
I would agree.
And obviously was a big influence on both of us when we
right.
were when we were young. Like Colin was just kind of starting out when we started.
Yeah. Huge
and he already had like a bag full of comics.
Yeah, huge influence on me. He said to me, don't do this. And I went, I'll stop now. Big influence
is that,
on
that,
me.
Is that how he influenced you?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, okay.
So there you go. Yeah, come see us live. We'd love to see you. We'll also have a table there. Dave will have a table where he's selling shirts.
Okay.
I will have a table where I'm watching Dave sell shirts. Because I've been selling shirts at a couple of different places.
So
and you know what? I can't sit by my shirts anymore.
You're done with it? You're over the whole shirt thing?
Yeah. I think we need to sell pants.
Okay, yeah. With a sneaky dragon on the bum.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
That's the next thing.
I'll that or his head just popping out of the fly.
Ooh, that is a sneaky dragon. Though not according to the Urban Dictionary.
And the only other thing I can tell you folks, I would normally say come see the Critical Hit Show, but we've just done the one that we're doing this month. Normally, end of the month, we do them at the Rio Theater, but there's a little movie called Star Trek Into the Darkness.
Really?
When is
that coming out?
It's coming out right now.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not to be confused with Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
Yeah, and not to be confused with whatever that movie where you go down the river and it's the darkness and the horror.
Heart of Darkness.
Heart of Darkness. Don't
not
confuse
to be
with
confused
that.
With you two when you leave the room. Don't forget to turn the lights off.
Yep. Not to be confused with the Darkness comic book.
Oh.
I actually sat next to one of the artists for that at the Ottawa. No one gives a fuck.
Not to be confused with the British glam Queen pastiche band The Darkness.
Or Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. who also was at a recent Comic-Con. But here's the other thing. Why not go onto the CBC podcast channel? I don't know what that means. iTunes, and listen to The Irrelevant Show, because I got some sketches on there.
Yes, you do.
So go listen to that. And I think that's all the plugs we have. Why not pick up one of Dave's newspapers if you have access to a time machine?
Can I just say, we've had a lot of likes on the Sneaky Dragon Facebook page, and I really appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
I think you do, too.
But you would like likes.
But I would like some more likes, because I think we have more listeners than we have likes on our page.
Sure.
And so it would be fun if other people went there. And here's the thing. If you listen to us on iTunes and you don't get to see your cartoons that you do every week,
right,
telling people what's on the show, which are always hilarious and great.
Oh, thank you very much.
And you won't get to see my lame-ass title cards that I do every week. And, well, last week's was a failure. But anyway.
No, it's not a failure at all.
Oh, it stank. But it's okay.
No.
Not all of them are great.
No.
Not all of them. It's okay. It's okay. Not all of them are great. But so, yeah.
This week's will be Sneaky Dragon's head on Henry Rollins' body holding a generic drivel magazine to his sweaty chest.
Oh, that's not bad on it. But so, yeah, if you listen on iTunes, you kind of miss those things. So if you like us on Facebook, then you'll get us in your feed and you'll be able to see those
We try
things.
To put some jokes and some funny stuff on there, some bonus material. And here's the other thing. If you could do this, and I know, listen, this is just a personal favor between you, me, and David. If you go onto the iTunes site and you you fill out a little thing, go like, hey, I like this show, and give it some stars. I'm not going to tell you how many stars to give it. 5. it helps us out as well. So do that. Do all the things that people at the end of podcasts tell you to do.
Mm-hmm.
If you come and see us, come and see us, and you don't have to come up and go like, I don't want to buy a shirt. We don't care. If you don't buy a shirt, we don't give a damn. We just want to say hi to you and whatnot. So please come see our free show. And I think that is it for us. Are we done?
Yeah, I think
Remember, Easy Rider magazine, you can pick it up on the stand and see nudity. That's the one tip. That's our leave behind. And don't go to Richmond. It's terrible. Thanks for listening to Sneaky Dragon. I'm Ian Boothby.
And I'm David Dederick. And remember, magic is everywhere.